what Trump, he believes that the Department of Justice should be his legal firm.
He thinks that the entire government should belong to him. He wants my generals to be like the German generals that Hitler had.
German generals.
You know, yeah. Sworn oaths to him personally. Everything is for his benefit because he is the only person who matters to him.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah Longwell. I am not Sarah Longwell. I'm JVL from The Bulwark. And unlike Sarah Longwell, I crushed the LSATs and got into a couple law schools. I chose not to go. So I like to think of myself as an amateur pre-lawyer, and I'm very excited to be here with you, George, and also to celebrate our Philly, well, I mean, you know, the season didn't work out well for the Phillies.
No.
But we stay strong no matter what, man.
Yeah, well, actually,
how are you, man?
I'm a Yankees fan, actually. I'm a Yankees-Eagles fan. Like
Yankees-Eagles fan?
Yes, like Boone is. Aaron Boone is a Yankees-Eagles fan.
Ever wear your Yankees stuff to an Eagles game?
No, why would I do that?
I'd be curious as to how that would work out for you.
I don't think people pay any attention. If the Giants stuff, they'd kill you. But anyway.
So, I mean, I want to start with something that is a little off the beaten track. We got a leak that internal Trump campaign documents have some short lists for attorney general for him, one of whom is Judge Eileen Cannon. Again, not a lawyer, but is this the sort of thing that gets a judge to recuse herself from a case?
I think she should be removed from the case by the Court of Appeals because she has screwed up one too many times. I don't know. I don't believe that simply the possibility that someone puts her on a list somewhere that other people are disclaiming, and if she hasn't had any conversations with anybody about it, and it's just, you know, a glimmer in someone's eye, I don't think that's sufficient to recuse. Does it look good? No.
I mean, once she knows, the problem is like now that she knows it, though, that's where the potential conflict comes in.
But then, you know, the problem with a rule that does that would be that people could think they could disqualify a judge by saying, by basically putting out there that so-and-so is considering her for a job. And,
fair,
you know, it's not a functional rule. I think it would be, you know, for recusal, I think there'd have to actually be discussions if she were talking to transition people about a job in the next administration or a judgeship in the next administration, and you could document that. Yeah, that could get her thrown off the case, I would think.
But even so, that's for removal. But just as an ethics thing, like if you were her, you'd recuse yourself, wouldn't you?
No.
Like if you were judging this and it came out.
Not if I had nothing to do with it. No, I would not.
All right. Well,
if I were her, I would recuse myself because I was incredibly biased against the government.
Sure. But
she's not going to do that either.
Sure. Well, once again, everything is on the honor system. All right. So moving on. NPR reported that, NPR just collected a whole bunch of reports that we have from Trump over the last week where he says that Elizabeth Lynn Cheney is guilty of treason, retruth if you want televised military tribunals. I will appoint a real special prosecutor to go after the most corrupt president in the history of the United States of America, Joe Biden, and the entire Biden crime family. What are we supposed to make about the legal threats? Are we supposed to just be like, no, it's like deporting 20 million people, or it's like building the wall and Mexico will pay for it. This is just stuff he says and nobody should worry about it. Or should we worry about it?
You know, his saying that he may or may not accept the election results back in 2020, that didn't turn out to be so good. So after January 6th, 2021, I'm inclined to take the guy's insane words at their face value. He may not be able to accomplish all those things, but he definitely wants to. And the fact that he wants to and is going to be surrounded by people who will not want to stand in his way in any respect leads one to conclude that we're in some bad times if he's elected. I don't think he's necessarily going to be able to throw Liz Cheney into Guantanamo for saying that he is unfit for public office. I think that, you know, there will be legal obstacles to that, but I think he's going to try to do some things of various sorts that would really are very, very dangerous. And we already can see it coming. I mean, there was this incident just very recently, just came to my attention last night, where a very prominent scholar of authoritarianism and fascism and how democracies slide into authoritarianism, a professor from NYU named Ruth Ben-Ghiat, was supposed to give a lecture at the Naval Academy. And some MAGA types complained. They didn't want midshipmen to learn about how demagogues, fascistic demagogues, can, you know, take over democracies and subvert the civilian control or the, you know, constitutional control over the military. And it's funny, they didn't want the midshipmen to hear that lecture. And it was postponed. So, you know, if that's happening now, imagine what would happen after January 20th if he's elected.
Yeah, I hear what you say about there being legal obstacles to him actually going after people like Liz Cheney. But on the other hand, there are legal obstacles to people who commit insurrections from running for president.
Yep.
And it turns out that, again, because of the honor system, a lot of these things are overcomable.
Right.
A lot of these obstacles can be overcome.
No, that's right. I mean, we do. I mean, the honor system is, you know, I guess, was it Ben Franklin? Who said it? What kind of government system of government we have? A republic, if you can keep it. I kept hearing that on our bus tour last week. Yeah. And that's it. We are, you know, I mean, we are on an honor system. The Constitution is an honor system. And it requires all of us to honor it. And if we don't, if half the population does not, then we're in for a world of hurt. And we're in for, you know, the need to resolve matters in ways that are extra constitutional. And that's very dangerous because that's, you know, we have a constitution and we have the rule of law. We have a system of government with rules so that we don't iron our differences, our disagreements out through, you know, cruder methods.
So one of the things that Trump, I think, has learned is he's learned that personnel is really important. And
personnel is policy, right?
Right. But it's especially important at DOJ.
Right.
Where, I mean, what Trump, he believes that the Department of Justice should be his legal firm.
Right.
I think.
Yeah. Right? No, he absolutely does. He thinks that the entire government should belong to him. Everything belongs to him. My generals. Remember how I used to talk about my generals? My generals this. He wants my generals to be like the German generals that Hitler had.
German generals.
You know, sworn oaths to him personally. You know, everything belongs to him. Everything is for his benefit because he is the only person who matters to him.
So I think he's learned his lesson about Jeff Sessions and even Bill Barr.
Right.
I think he's going to be looking for a Roy Cohn type. And I guess one of the questions is like, you know, well, the safeguards are like, well, I mean, that person would have to get confirmed. Do you have any sense, based upon the Republican Party, that there would be Republican votes? I mean, I assume Republicans will control the Senate. That's more likely than not. To deny his nominee for the Department of Justice, no matter who that nominee is? I kind of don't, right? I mean, this is, again, these are like guardrails. The guardrails are like, the president can't just throw somebody in Guantanamo Bay because the attorney general is independent. Well, he can nominate somebody who's not going to be independent. Well, but that person has to be confirmed by the Senate. You just look at it all, and I'm like, I don't know. Do we see any sign that?
Well, I do think I don't know what the Senate's going to come out to be like. I mean, a lot of people are assuming it's going to be just a 51-50 Republican, right, or close to that. I think he could lose a couple of votes here and there.
Okay.
Right? From Murkowski to maybe on a good day, the lady from Maine who learned her lesson. Oh, I don't know. It's possible he doesn't get all votes in the Republican caucus in the Senate. And it's possible his nominations may not might not go through because, you know, at least in the case of cabinet officials and sub-cabinet officials, you know, you do require essentially 60 votes. So that said, though, he's going to, you know, he'll try to rely on temporary interim appointments. And, you know, that will, he'll find a, you know, I mean, that's going to be tricky because there's all a highly reticulated set of rules about who you can appoint temporarily and for how long. But he's going to want who he wants in there controlling the Justice Department, whether or not that person has the official title of Attorney General of the United States. So, you could see some Trumpian official somewhere who is buried in the government somewhere become acting Attorney General. Or I have to go back and review the statutes about who would qualify for that. But he's gonna have some flunky in place who's gonna be taking directions from some other flunky outside the White House and from him directly. So I'm not. You know, I don't think the confirmation process, because we saw this with so many cabinet positions that were left unfilled during the first Trump administration. I don't know that the confirmation process is going to be a barrier for him to try to exercise untoward control over the Justice Department.
Guardrails. Oh, boy, guardrails.
Guardrails.
George, I want to talk about something fun.
Fun.
One of my mantras in life is that the greatest delicacy is seeing bad things happen to bad people.
Yes.
It's infinitely more fulfilling than seeing good things happen to good people.
Yes, it's true.
And bad things are happening to Rudy Giuliani.
Yes.
He has lost his New York City apartment. I believe he's lost his watch collection.
Yes.
Including the Invicta. Is it a Giants? I think it's a Giants Invicta, you know, with the New York Giants on it or something like that. I'm sort of a watch nerd. I find the idea that Rudy has an Invicta to be hysterical. Please tell me that this is all as good as advertised.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely as good as advertised. This is what happens when you are a judgment creditor and have a judgment that has been rendered by a jury, approved by the district court, and then affirmed on appeal. You get to go take that judgment to every court in which there's every jurisdiction in which the judgment debtor has assets, and you can basically seize those assets, get a lien on those assets. And so Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman,
yeah.
Right? I got the names wrong. Yeah. Did. They got that very large defamation verdict against Rudy from the district court in the District of Columbia. They took that judgment up to New York, and they got a federal judge there. I actually went to law school with the guy. And he's a former prosecutor, which is ironic. They're all former prosecutors. And I don't know that this judge worked for Rudy, but he, you know, was in the...
They were living in the same world.
Yeah, no, it's right. Crazy that that everybody looks at Rudy and just they can't believe what he's become. But anyway, the judge, you know, as a matter of course, there's really no discretion to it. Ordered that his condo and all these watches and all these other valuables, that they be attached for benefit so that they could be sold to pay off. Ms. Moss and Ms. Freeman, and that includes the deluxe apartment in the sky. People have been joking. Remember them? I don't know if you're too young to remember
the Jeffersons,
song,
of course,
like
baby.
Moving on up to the east side in a deluxe apartment.
Sherman
in the
Helmsley,
sky.
Yep.
And I guess they could keep the apartment if they wanted.
They have the keys to it, right?
A lot of friends up there. I mean, I'm sure people would people would come over and bring all sorts of goodies for them, and they could throw nice dinner parties there. I think I think they should do that. But yeah,
so
it's
what
like
else is there left?
And it's pathetic.
What
and
else
sad.
Is there for them to take?
What?
Well, we'll get to the pathetic and sad part because that's like my life water. what else is there left to get? Right. I mean, his assets, he doesn't have a ton of assets right now.
No, but he's got, but some of that stuff can be sold off and they'll get they can get some money out of it. I mean, that's just how it's done. I mean, this is why when Trump was facing the $83 million judgment and the $5 million judgment that he that Jean Carroll got against him, and then a $455 or whatever, however million dollar judgment that the New York State, the district, the New York State Attorney General got against him. I mean, in order to suspend the collection process, which involved basically the same idea, they'd attach his building here or his bank account there, you know, he had to post the bond so he could take the appeal. And Rudy kind of dealt with that by going into bankruptcy, but that's not going to help him at the end of the day. I mean, those judgments have to be collected. They can't, they're not dischargeable in bankruptcy. And there's really no way out. And he's not going to have anything to his name after this is all over, because he chose to, you know, defame, like, shamelessly and repeatedly and with malice these two women who were simply trying to do their jobs.
One of the fun details in this is that one of his assets is itself a $2 million legal claim against the Trump 2020 campaign and the RNC. So Rudy has, as his assets, he's like, these people owe me $2 million and I'm in process of trying to collect.
Yeah.
That claim transfers over to Ruby and Shay.
Yeah, because so you could end up with the idea that Ruby and Shay are going to have to prove to the satisfaction of a court that, you know, this claim
Rudy
is valid.
Did this work.
He did this work.
That just seems like the craziest thing for me, to me, and I don't, I guess this is
their,
a
their
legal
life
question
is
for
full
you.
Of ironies. This is one, and this is quite interesting. I mean, he did spend time. I mean, I don't know that he was performing useful legal services, but he did purport to be doing something, and Trump seemed to be approving what he did. So,
but you'd need his cooperation to prove that, right? I mean,
Rudy's?
It'd be hard.
I guess.
Rudy's cooperation.
I guess. I think then he's probably submitted affidavits to that effect. I don't know. It'd be a very interesting litigation. And I at the end of the day, I think they probably won't collect much from the Trump campaign, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. I mean, I would.
I mean, they got to wait. There's a long, going to be a long line of creditors picking on that carcass, even if he wins.
So I would think that there is some business somewhere that does, like, purchases lawsuits like this.
Yes.
For pennies on the dollar, right? And so they could sell that.
Correct.
Maybe I'm wrong. This doesn't exist. But I imagine, I mean, it's like debt, right? All
yeah, no, I mean, you could, any judgment, and a judgment can be sold and to somebody who's going to collect it, right? I mean, if I, for example, decided, hey, I want to have fun prosecuting Rudy and chasing Rudy's assets around and torturing the Trump campaign, I could offer them, you know, I could offer Ms. Freeman and Ms. Moss, you know, 70 cents on the dollar, which would be a great deal for them. They should take that immediately.
Yeah.
That would be an amazing deal on all these assets. And, you know, I think 70 cents would be, or at least definitely for the Trump part of it.
Yeah.
And they'd save the effort. And they'd take their cash and they'd move on up to the east side or whatever they want to do with their money. So, yeah, no, that's something that could happen.
George, I don't want to tell you what to do with your life.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, maybe. See, you should have gotten your law degree, JBL.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I could have done
not
it.
Not too late.
Could have done it. Was this
not
close?
Too late.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Night school.
The watches. You're not a watch guy, are you? You're wearing like the Apple Watch.
I have an Apple Watch. I used to have a, what's the name of it? Patek Philippe. Very fancy.
A Patek? Patek did you have?
I don't know. It was sort of a very basic one. I liked simple.
Calatrava?
I think that's it. Yeah. Really white with the nice.
I know
base.
You.
Yeah.
I'm a basic. What'd you do? Why'd you get rid of the Patek?
Oh, it's in storage somewhere because I had it in my office.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, I still have it. I mean, you know.
Good.
You know,
good. I just
want to
make sure you didn't trade that in. I want
to
make sure you didn't trade that in for the Apple Watch.
Yeah. No, I did not do that.
Thank God.
But I think it may need a repair. But then the repair center is like in, I think, in Rockefeller Center.
Geneva.
Yeah. Well, they go to Rock Center and they'd send it to Geneva. You're right.
Yeah, that's how these things work. Mm-hmm. All right. So we have a new Supreme Court. Before we move on to the Supreme Court, I just want to take a minute to talk about Giuliani. Because I have been trying to figure out if there is any parallel for a person to fall so far as a public figure the way he has. Because he has basically become like Andy Dick. He's the political Andy Dick, right? A guy who's like, hey, he's a supporting character on a highly rated network sitcom, and now he's a dude who just live streams himself walking around getting punched in the face for dollars.
It's even worse than that. If you read one morning in the New York Post that he'd been picked up on Skid Row or something in the Bowery or whatever at 3 a.m. and taken somewhere to a sanitarium or something, and he was living on the streets, you wouldn't say, gosh, I'm shocked at that point, based on what we know now. I mean, that's how bad this has become. And it really is, it actually is really sad. I mean, I know we joke about it, but it is really, really disturbing and pathetic. And, it's really hard to figure out how much of this was always there. There's definitely a narcissism and an egomaniacal nature that he always had, which is why people, he was always controversial. But he wasn't stupid, right? He wasn't stupid. He may be arrogant and he may be a jerk, but he was, nobody thought of him as stupid. And now he's just, the only explanation is the alcohol. That's the only thing that you can really, you can point to his original tendencies of being narcissistic and egomaniacal and wanting to be in the mix of things and wanting to be at the center of attention. But the way he ended up doing it, in a combination of Trump and the demon run, I think, is that really... What?
Yes. Yes.
What did I do? I got the bewitched treatment.
Yeah, no. That's me saying, I think you've put your finger on it exactly. It's the combination of the underlying characterological problems, which most of these guys have, to be honest.
Well, Trump attracts people with that personality.
Plus the alcohol, plus Trump.
Yeah.
That becomes the perfect storm, which turns you into Skid Row. I mean, it just, because pre-2016, he wasn't this.
No.
Right? I mean, it really is all very recent vintage.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. I mean, for anybody who's younger, who's listening to this,
they don't understand.
You can't understand that Rudy was the, for at least a year, the most respected public figure in America.
Yeah,
loved by huge bipartisan majorities. There was a hot 5 minutes when people thought he was going to become president. Now, I think that was always a pipe dream, but
he actually might have beaten Hillary, and in the I guess it was 2000 Senate race in New York, if he hadn't come down, he contracted prostate cancer. And so he withdrew from that race. And then Hillary ended up running against Lazio. I mean, I don't know how the Hillary Giuliani race would have been a much better matchup. And it's possible, history would be different, that she would not have won that race. And then we wouldn't have had Hillary in 2016. And who knows where we'd be today? Probably somewhere not all that great.
It's wild because you agree then that there is no precedent. Like there is, you can't really draw a comp.
No, nope.
And it's nuts. Unlike you, I don't find it sad. I find it delicious.
Well, I go back and forth. I mean, I do. But there really is. It's just like somebody needs to take this guy needs to be committed. I mean, seriously, so he doesn't do any more harm to himself or anyone else. And but I don't. I don't know that does he really fit the bill for that? I don't know. I mean, he's clearly a guy who can no longer deal with the world
can't take care of himself.
Take care of himself.
He will end up as a version of Cato Kaelin, I think. like, you know, like the 80-year-old drunk version of Cato Kaelin, because he won't have enough money to do anything.
What are
you, like,
yeah, just be sleeping on Cato's people's probably, sofas. Cato probably did all right for himself, you know. Yeah, Cato.
Oh, it's another reference for us old
probably
people.
On weed, you know, not the alcohol, but anyway.
So the Supreme Court just kicked off a new term. Whole bunch of cases heading up there, both election cases and the Trump prosecution cases. Is there anything you have your eye on that we, the lay people, should like just sort of, you know, dog ear in our minds?
I haven't reviewed the fall docket that closely. There's nothing that comes out to me that, you know, I mean, I think the question is, are they going to get any election cases? And if so, what questions are those election cases are going to pose? And right now, it's just too early to say. We don't know what states are going to be in play, what the issues are with particular, you know, if there are. I mean, she gets possible. I think it's distinctly possible she could win cleanly in a manner that doesn't allow any significant challenges. But we'll see. And that's all between now and December. That's when all the fun will begin.
I mean, I assume that we'll get an 11th Circuit appeal in the classified documents
right
case.
And that'll be way after the, you know, that'll,
will they hear it, do you think they'll want
the
to
Supreme
hear that?
Court I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think that. I think that the she's going to get reversed in that case, Judge Cannon, and I think the real question is going to be, I mean, she's going to get soundly and roundly reversed. There is just no legal basis for the conclusion that she reached that somehow that the Attorney General, under various statutes that make clear he can hire whoever the hell he wants, that, you know, she basically said he had no authority to hire the special counsel. There's just no basis for that, textually or otherwise. I don't think that's going to detain the 11th Circuit for long, although they're going to have to hear argument probably in November, I'm guessing, and they probably won't, you know, it'll take a few weeks for them to decide it. But I don't think there's a cert-worthy question there, meaning cert-worthy, meaning as in certiorari-worthy, which is the mechanism by which you take cases to the Supreme Court these days. So I don't, you know, I think, you know, I think he's going to lose that case. It's going to go back to the district court. And the real question is going to be whether the 11th Circuit exercises its discretion to throw her off the case, which I hope that it does. But we'll see.
You talked a little bit about this on the road,
yeah,
about the three strikes.
Right. I think we talked.
Can I put a quarter in the machine for you to give that to the listeners?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, we talked about that in Pittsburgh. Essentially, look, there are different ways by which you can get rid of a judge, just to put it really, really simple. The most direct way is for the judge to recuse himself or herself on either on the motion of a party or on the judge's own motion, which we call sua sponte. And there is, you know, there are specific statutes in the Judicial Code, Title 28 of the United States Code, that talk about, you know, how if there is a conflict of interest or the appearance of a conflict of interest or appearance of impropriety, the judges shall recuse themselves. And she's not going to do that. It's a very, very tough standard because you have to really show actual bias. But there is another way that judges can get reassigned, and that is if this is the inherent power of the Court of Appeals to oversee litigation. And what happens is, and this, I saw this happen in the court in which I clerked eons ago, which was the Second Circuit in New York, is that occasionally the Court of Appeals will think that a district judge has so screwed up a case and is in the process of continuing to screw up a case, whether it is because they just don't get it or because they have some kind of issue or maybe they hate one of the lawyers or the parties or something. They can just sort of, without explanation, just saying, we think it's in the interest of justice to take this case on remand when we send it back to the district court, and we direct the chief judge of that district court to reassign the case, put it back in the wheel and redesignate it to another judge. And in the 11th Circuit has this doctrine also. And the version that's extant in the 11th Circuit basically says that the court can exercise its discretion on the third strike, which is if the judge gets three things wrong and is reversed for a third time and it's really, really not even close, and all the errors go in the same direction, the Court of Appeals can say, okay, we're not doing this again. Reassign. And this will be her third strike. I think a good, you know, there was a very good brief written by former Solicitor General Seth Waxman over WilmerHale, that goes through it at great length at the standards, and I think it's pretty compelling because I just don't see any legal merit to the dismissal that she ordered that she issued. She just wanted to get rid of the case because she dragged it out long enough. So
would that mark her card professionally in any meaningful way?
Yeah.
Or is it like
it'll make her in the Trump administration might make her Chief Justice of the United States? Who knows? Well,
yes. But in a normal world?
Which world is that?
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
Yeah, in a normal world, this would be a black mark. I mean, it's really, really hard to get a court of appeals to do this to you. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily absolutely going to happen. I think it should happen. But it's really, really hard. And remember, this is a judge. We've seen some extraordinary things out of this district court. We saw a New York Times story where it was reported that two of her colleagues, including the chief judge of the Southern District of Florida, who sits in Miami, basically tried to get her to voluntarily get off the case because she was fucking it up so badly. And that's unbelievable. It's unbelievable for that to happen. It just doesn't, judges basically, federal judges are basically like independent islands mostly, okay? They do their own thing in their own chambers and nobody tells them what to do, even their colleagues. It's very rare for somebody to say, hey, listen, Eileen, you're kind of off the rails here. It's like these federal judges don't do that to each other. So that was quite remarkable. And then it gets in the New York Times. That's completely insane. So this, she is, from everything I've heard, not well respected by her colleagues in the 11th Circuit of either party. And I think that's what was shown by the absolutely brutal reversal she got a couple of years ago when this documents case first appeared in its pre-indictment phase. I mean, the Court of Appeals, including some conservative judges, just hammered her. We call it bench slapping. Is the modern phrase.
Oh God, this leads me to actually in an interesting way to the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, which was we're at, yesterday was the 33rd anniversary of Justice Thomas being sworn in. I mean, I guess. For the sake of argument, let's pretend that the 11th Circuit reassigns the case. Is that the kind of thing that in conservative legal circles would basically mark her card as you can't go any higher than this? I mean, I assume that 10 years ago it would have, right? It would have been the equivalent of somebody who's on tenure track for a professor at a college getting accused of plagiarism, which basically means you ain't getting tenure.
Yeah,
you can hang around here if you want, but you ain't never going any higher than here.
In the perverse world of the modern Republican, modern conservative movement, modern Trumpism, which is all seems to have coalesced. Yeah, I mean, she's going to be viewed as a loyal soldier who deserving of promotion. Maybe she'll be in charge of us at Guantanamo. Who knows?
And so here's the question. I mean, you've been around the conservative legal world for several decades.
Since the 1980s.
And so,
less recently.
With Thomas and Alito, were they always like this?
Or
not? Because, I mean, Alito at least, I believe everything I'd read about him was that he was a pretty serious high horsepower intellectual. And now he sounds like a guy who watches Newsmax.
Yeah, I was very strongly supportive of Alito when he was nominated. I was one of the conservatives who attacked the Bush administration for appointing the Bush 43 administration. For nominating
Harriet Myers.
And lo and behold, I mean, they had to withdraw her nomination, partly because of the objections and partly because they had difficulty preparing her for her confirmation hearings. And, one of the main candidates who was left, was Alito. And I took out a full page ad in some newspaper, I forget which one it was. I raised some money for a full page ad. Yale Law alumni for Alito, and got a bunch of people to sign it. And I, And I someday somebody will do a bio. I don't know. But, you know, something has happened there. I absolutely agree with that. I find some of the behavior in the past year inexplicable. The flags, I mean, you wouldn't, it's just a bad, bad idea to do that. If you had Sonia Sotomayor putting anything other than a Yankees flag out on her balcony in, you know, wherever she, her apartment building, wherever she lives here, you know, you'd hear about it. And I think rightly so. And then, you know, you have Thomas, I, you know, his behavior in the realm of his financial disclosures and, you know, it's just corrupt. I can't defend it. I cannot defend it. And I'm not saying he's taking money to rule in any particular way. I actually don't believe that. But, you know, for public officials to take those kinds of gifts from people, and particularly for judges, it's obscene. And possibly, you know, and I've said this before, and I hate to say it, but it's possibly criminal. I mean, if you or I submitted false disclosures to the government about our finances and we were just minions, you know, somebody would come barking up our tree. And, you know, I go back and you think of, everybody's too young to remember this, and even I'm too young to remember because I was just a kid, you know, of the fellow... for Abe Fortas, Justice Fortas, who had to took a relatively small amount of money, even if inflation adjusted, from some guy in New York who was like a rich guy who was in the securities business, who was being investigated by the SEC. Not clear that, I don't think any case ever came up to the Supreme Court, but when they found out, when the Justice Department, when John Mitchell and Richard Nixon found out that Fortas had taken this money, they said, oh, this is our opportunity to get Fortas off the court and get his seat, which they then proceeded to do by going to Earl Warren, Chief Justice Warren, and saying, you know, we're going to prosecute Fortas if he doesn't get off the bench. And so Chief Justice Warren, not wanting to sully the reputation of the court, persuaded Fortas to resign. And Nixon got that seat. It's like Abe Fortas, man, he did nothing that even remotely compares to what Clarence Thomas has done with the houses and with the RV,
the
and the amount of
the
money,
RVs,
and then
and
the false disclosures, the false and omissive disclosures. I mean, could that possibly be accidental? And I do wonder, did he pay taxes on this stuff? I'd really like to know. And I say that as someone who has, you know, I like the guy. I personally have liked the guy for a long time. And I don't agree, you know, I don't agree with everything he's done or written or said, but I agree with a lot more than what, you know, than more than enough to make liberals piss some liberals off. So anyway, you got me started on a subject that pisses me off to no end.
I love it. I want more pissed off George. What happens to the Federal Society from here? Does Leonard Leo discover at some point that he's like Mike Pence?
I don't know. I don't think Leonard really runs it anymore. I think they got too close to. I don't know. I mean, people who are closer to it can say, but I think, you know, not sure he's on the board anymore. I think they got sort of a little burned by the association. But I don't know. I could be wrong. Next day, you know, maybe we'll have to. Maybe they'll freak out at this. Who knows? I'm sure they're not watching. But you know, it's a weird organization in that they got support for a long time from like Trumpers and Trump haters during the Trump years. I think now it may have tipped in one way or the other, but. I mean, and so what their strategy was, because, you know, they had fun people giving money who had all sorts of opinions about Trump, was basically to stay away from talking about Trump.
Right.
But at the same time, kind of maintaining their position as sort of a flow a way for young conservatives to flow into the government. So, when we first started, you know, the group Society for the Rule of Law, which started out as Checks and Balances, we did an event with the Bulwark last week. We formed that group when the Federalist Society was sort of a little bit divided in a lot of ways. When we formed the group in 2018, I went to the National Convention dinner of the Federalist Society, which I go to every year. I was a member of the Board of Visitors. And you know, a lot of the young kids walked up to me and said, thank you for what you're doing, including kids who worked in the fucking administration. It turned out that I learned that one of the most, you know, my Twitter feed was very, very popular in the White House counsel's office circa 2017, 2018, because basically I voiced their frustrations with this, you know, this criminal asshole that they were working for. And my point is that I don't know to what extent, I mean, I think the young people are not, depending on where they are, they're not Trumpy at all. Some of them are, I guess, in the red states. I think it's a very, very divided organization. But I think there are other people who could speak to it better than I can at this point in time, including some of my colleagues at Society for the Rule of Law who actually go and speak to Federal Society events. I just haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, I wonder how
that was a long answer.
No, not, it's a good answer. I wonder how long you could, this is something Sarah and I talk about. I mean, we're approaching a point where anybody under the age of 25 who is in the Republican Party or in conservative circles is going to be there because of Trump,
yep.
Not in spite of Trump,
yep.
Right? Because
yep.
This is the only thing they've known.
Correct.
And at some point, that's how institutions tip over.
Correct.
Right. And, you know, I would say if the Federalist Society isn't a lost cause now, it will be if Trump wins.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of lost causes now. I mean, it may be a lost cause anyway. I don't know, because basically so many people are kind of polluted by Trumpism and they don't want to admit they're wrong, and they're going to stick to what they know, and they're going to hold on to the groups and organizations that they have. So I'm not sure. I don't expect various organizations on the right to necessarily have healthy futures, even if Trump is gone. And that includes especially the Republican Party. And that's another subject. We could do a whole podcast on that.
Well, we'll have time. George, thank you for putting up with me and explaining it all to me. Sarah Longwell will be back here next week. Thanks a bunch, George.
Bye-bye.
Good luck, America.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. And close.